originally made, and that objects are things that shouldn't move around the world. That doesn't make any sense at all, and no one's saying that. But in some cases, looting was undertaken in order, you know, as a part of an attack upon a culture, an attempt to control that culture, you know, under empire or whatever. And so certain items which are religious or which are about sovereignty, I mean, we don't have that situation because it hasn't been that we've been invaded and the crown jewels have been looted. Exactly the opposite.
Exactly the opposite. Professor Danix, really enjoyable conversation. Thank you. And with that, thanks to all of you talking about housing. But we're going to move on to what should be a very interesting hour. Is it possible that the new radical class is the middle class? Have they been so squeezed by successive governments that they feel, having basically been the crown jewels of political thinking for the best part of a century, are they now feeling on the outside? So are doctors, teachers, and even bankers the most likely to kick against the system? Even as I'm saying this, I'm not sure I entirely buy it, but it's what The Economist magazine is arguing, so is there any truth to it? Give us a call with your thoughts.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the Defence Secretary says he has no doubt the UK will spend 3% of its economic output on the military within a decade. John Healey has told a newspaper the target is no longer an ambition but a certainty. A major review of the armed forces is due to be published next week. Military analyst Sean Bell has told LBC the timing of Mr Healey's comments are significant.
In a couple of weeks' time in the Hague summit, a lot of NATO are meeting up, particularly with the US as well, all designed to show unity. But I think there's going to be a lot of announcements around 5% being a sort of headline commitment, and that'll just increase the pressure on the government.
The government has previously said that a 3% increase remains an ambition. The Ministry of Defence has announced more than £1.5 billion of extra funding for military homes. The money will be used on urgent repairs such as fixing roofs and tackling damp. The announcement forms part of the upcoming Strategic Defence Review. Veterans Minister Al Carnes has told LBC News an overhaul of military housing stock is desperately needed.
One of the biggest problems with the military at the moment is that people want a right to a family home. They want a right to a family life. A lot of these houses are built in the 1950s and 60s. They're run down, they don't have the right insulation, and they need refurbished. These are individuals sometimes move in a 20-year career 10 times. So to give them a good standard of family accommodation is the least we can do for individuals who are putting their lives on the line.
Donald Trump says he will double tariffs on steel and aluminium imports to the United States to 50% on Wednesday. The announcement is unaffected by a recent court ruling which sought to block some tariffs. It's not clear yet how the move will impact the UK-US trade deal that saw levies on metals reduced to zero. Scientists say for the first time in more than 20 years, they've made a breakthrough in the treatment of head and neck cancers. An international trial has found that the drug pembrolizumab kept the cancers at bay for 5 years. That compares to 30 months with standard care. And tributes are being paid to the actress Loretta Swit, who starred in the American comedy series MASH, who's died at the age of 87. She appeared in nearly every episode of the TV series, including the finale, which attracted a record of 106 million US viewers. LBC weather: showers will continue for northwestern areas for a time, dry with sunny spells elsewhere, highs of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Next time you walk their dog or feed their cat, when you pop by for a cuppa or just stop for a chat, tell your friends about Pension Credit. They could be missing out on an average of over £4,000 per year to boost their pension income. Pension Credit also unlocks other support like help with heating costs, council tax, and a free TV licence for people over 75. Tell them to search for Pension Credit on gov.uk. Pension Credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Matthew Wright.
Yes, indeed, Matthew Wright here with your weekend breakfast. I'm beginning to wonder whether we should have done the pros and cons of repatriating artefacts, museum artefacts, as there seems to be, to my surprise, quite a lot of love for museums returning items. And David in Glasgow says I should have mentioned that Glasgow museums have returned the UK's largest ever repatriation of cultural artefacts to their rightful owners. So a subject for another day. But I'll be honest, when I saw this idea in The Economist, I had to bite on it. And I wondered, is it a joke? Is it on trend? Or is it a load of old nonsense? Are the middle classes really the new radicals, the ones most likely to stick a finger up, a revolutionary finger towards the man? For those of us of a certain age, raised on 70s comedy like Citizen Smith, starring the brilliant Robert Lindsay as a one-man suburban revolutionary in a Che Guevara beret, the idea of middle-class men and women rising up against the system, well, remains a bit of a laugh.
People!
Wolfie Smith there, leader of the Tooting Popular Front. But what was a joke then in the mid-70s? Well, it isn't funny anymore, it seems. Or as Boomer Revolutionary Bob Dylan put it, the times really are a-changing. So much so that The Economist magazine reckons it's identified this new political trend, the middle-class radical. Really? Really? I mean, our teachers, doctors and even bankers, the group most likely to kick back against the system, as the mag claims. It reckons that after Brexit set off, quotes, the longest Waitrose queue in history, that the middle classes have been revolting ever since. Is the squeezed middle worried it might be squeezed out of existence altogether unless it stands up in its Russell and Bromley shoes and fights back? Now, if you, like me, have ever flicked through Karl Marx's Das Kapital, and I can imagine from some of the comments I've seen today, not many of you have, you'll already be familiar with phrases like class consciousness, but perhaps mindful that economist readers maybe aren't that ginned up on Marxist theory. I don't know. The mag spells it all out, and it goes like this. The middle classes are mad as hell, and they're not going to take it anymore. These are the words of Duncan Robinson, political editor at The Economist, who goes on, class consciousness is a simple concept. Before an oppressed class can throw off their shackles, they must know how hard they have it. Karl Marx had workers in mind when he devised it. Increasingly, those who are most aggrieved in British society are not those at the bottom, but those stuck in the middle. Overtaxed by the state, underpaid by their employers and overlooked by politicians, middle-class consciousness is growing. It started with Brexit, Robinson continues. For many in the middle class, the relatively well-off, well-educated band of voters who make up about a third of the country, this was a radicalising moment. Comfortable lives were rudely interrupted by politics. Being ignored and at times abused by politicians is a new sensation for the middle classes. For decades, their wants and needs drove political debate. Brexit inverted this deal, and now every major party except the Lib Dems falls over itself to offer something to an imagined working class voter. Perhaps aware that some of their own readers might identify as middle class, The Economist eases off its sort of mocking tone towards the end of the polemic with a line that it's easy to mock the middle class, the mag admits. Perhaps the well-off whinging about their tax burden or taking to the streets because a holiday in Europe is now less convenient is inherently ridiculous. Politicians can overlook such voters only for so long. It is hard to rule without them. They are simply too numerous to ignore, from the grumpy remainer to the junior banker scouring Reddit for ways to cut his tax bill, to the doctor on the picket line. Middle class consciousness is spreading. And I found myself being slowly drawn into that polemic by Duncan Robinson. Now, in a moment, I'm going to be speaking to Carl Hansen, assistant editor at Tribune Mag. But first, Duncan Robinson himself is joining us on the line, political editor at The Economist. Good morning to you, Duncan.
Morning.
Great piece, if I may say, and some really, really good lines. The longest Waitrose queue ever, still making me laugh now. How serious are you about middle-class radicals?
Well, they are very, very grumpy. So this piece came because I went to a very middle-class festival. I went to Hay on Wye over in Wales. And there's just still lots of very grumpy middle-class people who are just quite angry about Brexit. For the simple reason that, in a lot of cases, it's the first time they're sort of lost politically in their life. And you're sort of allowed to be upset about politics. That is just how democracy works. If you lose out, you're allowed to be a little bit grumpy about it. But then it's sort of broader than that. If you think about, like, which unions, the most sort of radicals now, it's often the sort of quote-unquote middle-class ones. It's teachers who are demanding higher pay. It's doctors who want a gigantic pay rise. And they're the ones who are most sort of sharp-elbowed about sticking up for themselves.
When you say sticking up for themselves, what do we actually mean by that? Because if a middle-class radical, are you expecting a middle-class radical to go beyond joining a protest march, perhaps to go beyond supporting their union on a strike? Because I wouldn't necessarily consider those to be radical positions. Well, maybe they are radical for the middle classes.
Yeah, I think it's that latter point. I think these are, it's a class of people who've learned that they do actually have to stick up for themselves every now and again. Because the strangest thing of the past sort of 15 years of austerity, so you had pay restraints in the public sector, but a lot of public sector unions were sort of quite passive about it, especially, well, if you take doctors as an example, it's only in the past few years that they've taken on this very aggressive militant attitude in terms of getting pay rises. Yeah. And to be fair to them, it's really worked. They went on strike a lot and they got a gigantic pay rise, and so they're balloting to go on strike again, and they're going to try and get another gigantic pay rise. And that's a big shift to where these types of jobs were about 15 years ago, where there was just year after year of pay going down in real terms, but they didn't really do anything about it.
Did we have... I know we had working class radicals, certainly the 1970s seemed to be dominated by them, but with Thatcher and the breakdown of union representation, did we have working class radicals in the 80s? Who were the radicals in the 80s and the 90s and the noughties before Brexit?
Yeah, you had a much more orthodox relationship where it was just that there was still more of a working class in the 1980s. Before the industrialization hurried up. And so it was a much more sort of orthodox class structure in Britain back then. But now things are just a little bit weirder. So you do have this strange situation that you've got someone with a good job and a professional career going on strike in the form of doctors.
And the politicians, have they missed a trick here? I mean, we've got the rise of reform. A huge populist rise of reform. I hear a lot from the middle classes of feeling politically homeless.
Yeah.
Has reform, for want of a better phrase, bought off the working class radicals? And have the middle class then just been abandoned by everybody but the Lib Dems? Is that your take?
My take is that there's basically been overcompensation post-Brexit. So in the run-up to Brexit, you did have a class of people who were just broadly ignored by British politics. They were taken for granted by their natural home, which was the Labour Party, and they did sort of stick two fingers up to them. And so now you've got the situation where politicians are sort of overcompensating, where they're really trying to focus on the wants and needs of working class voters, often in quite a sort of caricaturish, cartoonish way. But they are trying to do that. But that means that middle class voters, which used to be their base, are being overlooked. And because they're not used to being overlooked, they're getting angry. Quite grumpy about it. Yeah.
Duncan Robinson, thanks for giving out your time. And thanks again for it was an entertaining read, but it scored some serious points as well. Thank you. Now, it'll be very interesting to see what Carl Hansen has to say about this, editor at large at Tribune Mag, a magazine that will be more than familiar with the work of Karl Marx, I'd like to think. Good morning to you, Carl. Middle class consciousness, the middle class as the new radicals, the forgotten class, the angry class. Some of that kind of rings true with me personally, as well as an observation around me. Well, what's your perspective at Tribune?
Well, I think if you're middle class in this country, then in recent years you've experienced your material conditions worsening. Your income doesn't go as far as it used to. Public services are getting worse. And I think what you see with the middle class is a group of people who have traditionally benefited from the status quo are realising that the status quo no longer works for them. And I think a consequence of that is getting politicised.
Do you think Karl Marx would approve?
I think he would. I think Karl Marx would recognise what we're seeing today in Britain, which is that for the large majority, which includes the professional and skilled classes, that their wages don't go as far as they used to, that the economy would increasingly benefit asset holders and rentiers, people who own lots of property and own lots of shares and stocks, and that people who have to work for a living, whether that be the majority, the working class, and the smaller middle class, that their living conditions would worsen. So, I mean, you don't need to be a Marxist to realise this, but yeah, Karl Marx would be familiar and say that he predicted the situation that we're experiencing in the UK and in many advanced economies.
Has it been an error by the political class to ignore the middle class after favouring them for so long, or is it simply their turn?
I mean, it's certainly a political failure. You look at what's happening in our politics now. We've got a breakdown of the two-party system. You know, the entire political system, the established parties are in disarray, and that's because the status quo is not working for the majority. I think if you're working class, you recognise that this is a pattern that's been going on much longer. You've become less secure. Your living standards have gone down. But it's accelerated so far.
You see, that's I just wanted to ask, so I kind of read into Duncan's piece that the sort of working class have been bought off, in a sense, by the populist narrative, that the post-Brexit narrative this country's taken. That would have been where Karl Marx would have originally wanted to see the revolution coming. Now, are we going to see can we foresee a middle class revolution? How far are the middle class radicals likely to go to get what they might think their fair share back again?
Political change will only happen that genuinely benefits the middle class when the working class and the middle class change the political system. I don't think there's going back to a status quo where you'll see growing poverty in the working class, which is what we're seeing right now. You know, around a third of children live in poverty. There's not going to be a change to that political system that goes back to benefiting the middle class, but leaves the working class in decline. I think if you want to see a real change and the middle class want to see benefits, then you need to pivot the economy from benefiting asset holders, a small group of rich people, and instead benefiting everybody who works for a living, and that includes the working class and the middle class.
I have to say, on that last line, Carl, I'd like to think that no one will disagree with you, but we shall see. A pleasure talking about the great man, Karl Marx, with Carl Hansen there. And it'll be fascinating, I think, to hear from you guys listening at home. One, if you're working class, have you been bought off? What happened to working class consciousness that basically gave rise to the trade union movement, and in turn gave rise to the Labour movement that currently runs this country? And perhaps even more germane, are you a middle-class radical? What does that mean? I mean, is it beyond being angry? I mean, there's lots... I'm angry. I'm middle-class, I'm angry. But I wouldn't say necessarily call myself a radical. So what makes a middle-class radical? 0345 6060 973 is the number. I'd love to hear your thoughts, and we will, we'll also get the latest on this shocking prison stabbing. All of that after the latest LBC News headlines from Dominic Ellis.
Defence Secretary John Healey says he has no doubt that military spending will reach 3% of GDP by 2034. President Trump's announced he'll double steel and aluminium import tariffs to 50% from Wednesday. And a team of international scientists say they made a significant breakthrough in the treatment of head and neck cancers. LBC weather: showers will continue for northwestern areas, dry and sunny elsewhere. Highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Just off the M25 at Junction 28, part of the Brook Street roundabout, that's the roundabout with the A12, is closed. It's for weekend work, so definitely do expect delays. Also, problems on the North Circular Road southbound at the A12 junction. The exit slip road is closed because of an accident, and that's causing delays back to the M11. The A40 is closed again today, westbound between the Marylebone flyover and the Northern roundabout, and that's for the weekend works. And in central London, lots of roads are closed for the Major General's review. They're closed now and will be until around 3 o'clock this afternoon. So roads around Piccadilly, St James's Park and Whitehall all stay closed.
LBC.
Sun's out, fun's out. At Tesco Mobile, our deals will help you get the most out of summer. Get the iPhone 16 Pro Max with unlimited data for just £54.99 a month with club card prices, saving you £207. And you'll collect club card points too. How you choose to spend them is up to you. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. Ends 13th of July, 16.74. Club card and 36-month credit agreement required. Collect 1 point for every £1 spent. Minimum 150 points required for club card vouchers. See tescomobile.com/terms.
This is LBC.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? Huh. With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for flight, I mean car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
Here at Pets in a Pickle, our name has caused some confusion. We've had people asking us what pickles we recommend. And a lovely lady looking for a pickle costume for her pet. But they've all been barking up the wrong tree. We actually offer simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, including unlimited access to video consultations with First Vet. So, for pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
Next time you walk their dog or feed their cat, when you pop by for a cuppa or just stop for a chat, tell your friends about Pension Credit. They could be missing out on an average of over £4,000 per year to boost their pension income. Pension Credit also unlocks other support like help with heating costs, council tax, and a free TV licence for people over 75. Tell them to search for Pension Credit on gov.uk. Pension Credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
With Little Plus Fruity Super Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free fresh fruit coupon with every shop. Download the Little Plus app to get by switching to the Retail Industry Awards Fresh Produce Retailer of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability. Ends 4th of the 6/25. Full T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/spin.
Matthew Wright on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
I'm impressed. There you go. I said I'm impressed by the quality of your messages on this. There's some people who've got their thinking caps on at 8:20 on a Saturday morning. People like Dave, who says, "While we as a country, Matthew, are so obsessed with the continuation of this nonsense of a class-driven society, the UK will always fall short in its quest for fairness and equity, particularly in relation to distribution of wealth." Gary says, "Morning, Matthew. What are the middle classes expecting? Governments have come for the underclass and the working class. They were always going to be the next target. The next recession is going to be a white-collar recession, and those who have championed benefit cuts are potentially going to discover a bullet hole in their brogues." Mary says, "Having spent a weekend with my middle-class millennial children and their spouses, they believe the Laffer curve now looks like a mushroom with fewer and fewer contributions to the exchequer by citizens at the top and the bottom. They are ripe for radicalisation." I agree. Jeff is on the line from Carmarthen in South Wales. Good morning to you, Jeff.
Morning, Matthew. I'm a radical middle class.
Oh, right. We've got one. We've got power to the people, Jeff. Why? Why are you a radical middle class?
Well, first of all, I'm a musician and a video editor. Right. I do Avid and things like that. And my wages haven't gone up since the 90s, you know, the 1990s.
Jesus.
So, you know, we're still paying, we got good money back then, but it's never changed, really. We're still paying the same daily rate. So it hasn't really gone up since then. And from the musical point of view, we were told, you know, that the Labour Party were going to bring in artist passports for musicians, totally ignored the last announcement. They didn't do anything about it. It's all been brushed under the carpet to favour the red wall people and people who still...
When you say red wall, can I put words in your mouth and say you're talking about the working class people? Is that what it is?
Well, I'm talking about Lisa Nandy, you know, a person who has as much culture as Les Patterson, you know what I mean? And she doesn't support arts and music and the culture. She supports her working class Sheffield voters. She doesn't stick up for us.
Okay.
And there's going to be a radical change in a year's time. Plaid Cymru are going to take the Senate. And that's purely because of the fact that the Labour Party have ignored this Brexit vote and just turned against... Plaid Cymru are very middle class.
Is it Brexit for you? I mean, that certainly seems to be the argument in The Economist. That's when the middle class kind of realised that the good times were over.
Yeah, we were totally ignored. We turned up. There was over a million people on all the marches. Yeah. We came from Cymru, from Bridgend. I shared a coach with the Liberals from Bridgend going down to the marches. We've just been totally ignored. The Labour Party only seem interested in the working classes.
I know South Wales quite well. Lots of it has traditional, strong working class associations. What's happened to the Welsh working class? Where are they? Because I think as much as the middle class has been radicalised, I'm fascinated as to where the original working class radicals have gone.
So Wales is just different politics to the rest of the country. Cymru is different to the rest of the country in that my wife is Welsh speaking. She didn't speak English until she was 6 or 7 years old. But the middle classes in Cymru have always been Welsh speaking. So the doctors, the teachers, the best schools in the country are Welsh speaking schools. So, you know, Plaid Cymru was set up by the middle classes. And when it next year, when that change happens, it's going to be massive.
Can I just ask on that? Is it going to be because people want Plaid Cymru, or is it because people have had enough of the main parties, for want of a better, the national parties?
I think there's a bit of both in that. But I do think that Labour have walked a very dangerous course, which will split the country. It's happening in Scotland and Ireland as well. But I think it's most pronounced in Cymru.
Okay. And may I ask just, and not in a sort of disingenuous way at all, but you come and say, you know, I'm a middle-class radical, and you're giving me a big smile. How radical are you? I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Are you going to overthrow Keir Starmer? Are you plotting a revolution?
I'm looking for Cymru to rejoin the European Union as an independent country. Apparently, they had meetings this week because I follow them on my social media, you see. So the head of Plaid Cymru was with the EU this week, working out what they can deliver beyond the rest of the country. In other words, they're saying we're going to go further.
Okay, so I would say that sounds pretty radical to me, that you've got an ambition, you're working towards Wales as a separate entity joining the EU. And if I may say so, Jeff, good luck with that. Pleasure talking to you. Our first middle-class radical. Any middle-class people listening to that who are more radical? Have we got any more people that are more middle-class than someone who works in music and tech? Have we got any bankers, any radical bankers? That's what I'd really like. You know, what are you going to do, Mr. Banker or Mrs. Banker, that's going to impress me with your radicalisation? Love to hear your thoughts. 0345 6060 973 is the number. Now, if you've been listening to LBC News, you'll be aware that a prison officer has been stabbed, long-lasting prison, a Category A prison near Evesham in Worcestershire. And it has been reported, unconfirmed, that the knife used in this unprovoked attack may have been delivered into the jail by drone. We are aware, I think all of us, that drones are being used to ferry phones, weapons and drugs into prison. And seemingly the authorities have little to, by way of response. I'm joined by Vanessa Frake, former prison governor and author of The Governor, My Life Inside Britain's Most Notorious Prisons. Nice to see you, Vanessa. Good morning.
Good morning, Matthew.
Before we get on to the knife attack, how bad are drones at the moment and what can be done by the authorities to address them?
Well, look, in January 2024, the then government initiated no-fly zones of 400 metres around every single closed prison in the country. But, you know, this is just a pie-in-the-sky idea that was going to stop them. You know... Organised crime gangs, people, drugs are big money, mobile phones are big money. And, you know, the prison inspector even said about how concerned he was about drugs and particularly weapons getting into the high security estate. Now, if you want to really combat the drones, you know, it's a multi-pronged approach. Not one thing is going to solve it. You need to install nettings in prison. You need to upgrade your CCTV systems. There's drone detecting technologies about. frequency scanners, lasers, you know. But of course, Matthew, all of these things cost money. And, you know, my concern is that, you know, somebody will lose their life in prison if we don't do something about it.
I was just about to say, we're talking about costing money, and yet we have a prison officer stabbed in an unprovoked attack.
Again.
And, you know, there are costs, there are human costs being paid all the time. And my sympathies and my heart goes out to prison officers in the modern age. What do we know about what happened at Longlaughton?
Well, as you said, there's unconfirmed reports that it was a flick knife that managed to get into Longlaughton. I mean, Longlaughton is a Category A prison, supposedly the highest security. And somehow that knife got in, whether that came via an individual or via drones, we don't know. I believe it was about 8:30 in the morning, a confrontation between a prison officer and a prisoner who just pulled out the knife and stabbed him quite severely. He was airlifted to hospital and had an operation. My thoughts are with him and his family and his colleagues.
And likewise, Vanessa, our thoughts too. Vanessa Freight, thanks for giving up your time this Saturday morning on another really troubling aspect to our failing criminal justice system. You're listening to Matthew Wright on LBC. More of your middle-class radical thoughts after the latest news headlines from Dominic Ellis.
The Defence Secretary says he has no doubt that UK military spending will reach 3% of national income by 2034. The government's previously said that level will only be reached if economic conditions allow. President Trump says he will double tariffs on steel and aluminium imports to the US to 50% on Wednesday. Mr. Trump told a rally in Pennsylvania overnight that the change will protect the domestic steel industry. And a team of international scientists say they've made a breakthrough in the treatment of some head and neck cancers. A trial tested the immunotherapy drug pembrolizumab that kept cancers at bay for 5 years compared to 30 months with standard care. LBC weather, showers in northern England and Wales before clearing later, dry with sunny spells elsewhere, highs of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Imagine your dream holiday made possible by comparing cheap flights on Kayak. Walking on an unspoilt goes on for miles beach on the Sardinian coast. Plunging into the splendour of an idyllic lagoon in Greece. Ah, yes. This is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare prices from hundreds of travel sites and airlines to find your dream deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Where would we be without the curiosity to explore?
It takes us to new places.
It even got us to the moon.
And now there's never been a better time to satisfy your curiosity about electric cars. With great offers on our award-winning range, including the Ioniq 5 and Ioniq 6, available with £2,000 deposit contribution and 0% APR. Discover more at Hyundai.co.uk. Ends 30th of June 25. Finance subject to status. Hyundai Motor UK Limited is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
This is LBC with Matthew Wright. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
We're discussing whether the middle class have been radicalised as a result of being ignored from Brexit on. That's the view of The Economist magazine. It's prompted David to message, I'm 56 and getting more radical by the year. As your musician stated, salaries have stagnated for decades, jobs are rarer than hen's teeth. Whatever people say, services are dire and taxes keep going up. Of course people are getting radicalised. And then John, I mean, he's hole in one this, because his message really gets to the essence. He says, morning, Matthew. As I set off to Waitrose... Revolutions have often and even usually come from and been led from the middle class. French Revolution, US independence, Chartists, even in the 60s, Paris 68 and Bader-Meinhof. Good point about three parties chasing after mythical working class voters. Maybe Wetherspoons, run by a public schoolboy, isn't the beer keller of radicalism and insurgency they think it is. And we've got Brent on the line in Derby. Good morning to you, Brent.
Good morning. I was just actually going to make that point about the middle class has always been the leadership and always. And if you look at your historical precedents, Gandhi was a lawyer.
Yes.
Dr. King was a preacher. You've always had these leadership and it's always been the establishment who attacked the suffragists and suffragettes were all middle class. So there's actually something inherent in the culture of this country that middle class actually drives change. And that's the thing. They've always been the sort of folk and the abolitionists, the factory reformers. There's a great tradition in this country of ordinary people just reaching that level where they've just had enough. And then
I always think the British, I suppose we had Cromwell, didn't we? There was a brief period of revolution. But by and large, I've always thought that we're pretty accommodating. We're not very revolutionary.
Well, it's quite revolutionary. I mean, Cromwell himself didn't come from the upper class. Cromwell himself was self-made. And he's another example of a sort of radical who again, is consequences. Now, I myself would say I am technically working class as a teacher, so I tick all the boxes about my wages. I tick all the boxes about I've played by the rules, I've played the game, I've done everything right, and I feel constantly being punished for it and completely ignored. So in my case, it's driven me into politics, it's driven me to protesting, it's driven me to environmental causes, it's driven me to set up campaign groups. I would say that most of my colleagues are very similar as well. We didn't start out life. I didn't start out life in the middle class. I started out life as a working class kid. So, you know, and I think a lot of the middle class actually are like that, where there's a lot of self-made people, a lot of people
maybe,
who are generations
back.
And two generations back have that heritage where they've had to fight tooth and nail, and maybe they've got comfortable, and then they've been reminded by their grandparents or great-grandparents. You take, you know, a lot of people who are second, third generation migrants. They're exactly the same. They come over with nothing.
Where is it going, Brent? You said something really interesting, that the middle class has always sort of led revolution. And that got me wondering whether buying off the middle class has been one way that politicians have established. So you can have stable government if you buy off the middle class, if you stop them from revolting. So the fact that we're now not caring about the middle class, does that carry political risk?
It does, because they have the confidence. The middle class is educated enough and has the confidence enough to stand up for itself. If you look at any sort of local group or local campaign group, it's usually, you know, started by a middle class person, you know, a teacher, doctor, lawyer, dentist. Because they have got that cultural capital. They've also got that confidence to stand up for themselves. So there is always, if you bully people, there's always consequences. All those revolutions have started when you take away people's freedoms or you just push them too far. There's always a kickback. There's always a pushback.
What happened to our traditional working class radical? Where are they all gone?
I think the problem is like myself, I think the traditional radical working class have become the middle class. So I as I say, I was born working class. But I'm now technically middle class. Now, my mentality is still working class. And I think a lot of your listeners might relate to that. They might have grown up in a council estate like me, but they don't live in a council estate any longer. But we still retain, I think, that fight. I mean, because I was brought up to fight. You know, and that's what my parents brought me up to fight. Stand up for myself.
What do you want, Brent? What are you fighting for? What could Keir Starmer or a future Prime Minister, Farage, anybody, what could they offer to buy you off?
The same thing we've always wanted. Fairness, equality, justice. I think the problem is the rich have got richer and the poor are getting poorer. I'm not a person who's a ladder puller. I don't look at the people below me and punch down. I think we need to punch up. And I think that's what I want, a fairer, more equitable society. I work in education because I want as social mobility to be better. And we are now even more divided. And the problem is, I think people in charge have played class warfare. I think they've too often they paid off the middle class until, as one of your texters says, they've come for us now. It's a bit like the Pastor Naimo, the first they came for, now they've come for the middle classes. And that's our problem.
I mean, I laugh, and you know why I'm laughing, because it kind of sounds like a joke, but that, all the points you're making are really serious. Can you foresee a political party fighting for the middle class beyond, I suppose, the Lib Dems do it, don't they, to some degree?
I mean, the irony is, about 25, 30 years ago, Tony Blair, Margaret Thatcher...
All of them were fighting for the middle class, yeah.
Because it used to be the middle class vote used to get you elected. So all the policies when it comes to housing and privatisation was all about that. But they've overcooked it. They've spent that capital, they've spent the money bribing successive people. And I think now, unfortunately, they're running to the hills trying to basically, it's a fire sale in our economy because there's nothing left.
I get that. Give me something positive that will satisfy that. I mean, you said fairness and equality, but who's going to give it to you? Which party is best positioned to fight for your interests?
Well, honestly, I'm going to be biased when I say it, but the only party left on the left is the Green Party. To be perfectly honest with you, when you look at their social policies, you look at when most people actually put into a website and say, which party would you identify most sort of policies with, it would actually be the Green Party. But they suffer from that image of, well, we're just about the environment. And I think there's more to it than that. The problem is you need a change of the system. Ironically, you need a voting change system, don't you? So you need to change the system in order to have more change. But the gatekeepers of that in charge
don't want to know.
And I'm not saying I'm not a reform voter. I think they've got the right word. Reform is definitely the right word. They're the wrong people to do it because I think the people in charge of that party, they talk about how they can relate to the working class. I grew up working class. Nigel Farage didn't. So there's a lot of people looking for false prophets out there. And I think that's too cheap and that's too lazy. So my advice, like everything else, people have to go out and start campaigning themselves, getting involved in politics, start making more actions. And I think that's the awakening of the middle class, is that now you're seeing more people becoming more involved. I think that's I'm not using the word woke in that sense.
No.
People are more awake. People need to wake up, basically, and fight. Because democracy, this is the tradition in this country. Democracy's had to be fought for, secured by, ironically, many in the middle class who just reached a point where they've had enough.
Brent, I've got to wrap it up. Brilliant phone call, if I may say so. I'm not sure I necessarily would agree with every word, but I'm certainly minded to agree with most of what you said. And... yeah, really provocative call. Thank you, Brent, our middle-class radical, who's moved from the working classes and become middle-class. I wonder how many of you listening would say that you were the same, that you've moved from working class to middle class, but the anger or the radical feelings are still there. So much in that call to respond to, plus many more calls to get to. So just bear with, because I do want to talk about disposable vapes. We're going to talk about them at length a little later in the programme. But as you know, the law is changing tonight to make disposable vapes a thing of the past, or is it? Kate Hinton is Head of External Affairs at Material Force. She joins me now. Morning, Kate.
Morning.
So, I've had this explained to me this morning. I still can't quite get my head around it. We're banning disposable vapes, but you are going to be able to buy vapes that you can recharge but not refill, which, in other words, might be described as disposable vapes.
I think you're right, actually, because basically we have got rid of some of the biggest problem, which is the disposable ones. But the new products that are coming onto the market, and they're coming on really, really fast, they look just the same. So you look at, if you were to look at them side by side, the disposable ones look exactly the same as the rechargeable, reusable ones. They are rechargeable and reusable, which is good. But the problem is they look just the same. And I think because people now are used to throwing these things away, and because these are items are just as cheap, we're actually really concerned that we're going to have the same problem again.
So this is interesting. You like me and all my colleagues here are of a similar view that the law isn't going to work. Now, I'm tempted to ask why, because it's not like we're doing this in isolation. Australia and New Zealand have been looking at vape control. Australia was looking very seriously. I think it was prescription only at one point. Now, I think you can only buy vapes in chemists and pharmacies. So there's other countries trying different, more radical approaches, and yet we seem to have we know there's a potential problem and we've completely missed the target.
I think we have tried to do the right thing, and I think there will be hopefully a step change. But I think the key actions now have got to come is that the products that are being invented and being put onto the market now, they're doing that so quickly. Why can't they just as quickly put in the recycling points into the places where people are buying the stuff? You know, there is legislation out there that the vape retailers should actually be providing recycling points across all the stores. And I think one thing we've all got to do as consumers is make sure that when we buy vapes, we do actually recycle them. And we've got this postcode locator on Recycle Electricals where you can find your nearest recycling point. There are actually 30,000 locations across the UK where people can actually take these things to be recycled. So I think we all need to do our bit to make sure these things get recycled.
I mean, all very laudable, and you're quite right on that spin. It's just that when I think about 30,000 recycling points against just over 1 million vapes being thrown away every year, it doesn't take a genius to work out that maybe we need more recycling points. 33,000 recycling points against 27 million homes. It's not a lot.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we all need to do more. And just so you know, it's actually 8 million vapes are being thrown away every single week. It's absolutely phenomenal. That's like over a million a day. It's
13 a second.
Exactly. Thank you. You're
what a
putting
waste.
My stats back at me. I know. It's a huge waste. And these items contain lithium. So if we do throw them away and we put them in the wrong place, i.e. the bin, they can get into the waste system, and they've caused over 1,200 fires across the UK in the waste system. Whether it's in fire trucks, in waste centres, they can cause these fires when they get crushed. So we do need to make sure they go to the right places.
Very, very serious, I think, all of this. Kate Hinton, indebted to you giving up your time this Saturday morning. We are going to talk more about vapes a little later, because I can't quite understand whether this ban on disposable vapes actually adds up to being a ban on disposable vapes. But we will be returning to your thoughts on middle-class radicals after we check in with Dominic Ellis for the latest LBC News headlines.
The Defence Secretary John Healey says he has no doubt that military spending will reach 3% of GDP by 2034. President Trump has announced he will double steel and aluminium import tariffs to 50% from Wednesday. And scientists say for the first time in more than 20 years they've made a breakthrough in the treatment of head and neck cancers. LBC weather, showers continuing for northwestern areas but dry with sunny spells elsewhere, highs of 26 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb on the M25. Anti-clockwise between junctions 25 at the A10 and 24 at Potter's Bar. Two lanes are closed following an accident. Also just off the M25 at junction 28, the south side of the Brook Street roundabout, that's a roundabout with the A12, is closed, and that's because of the weekend works. Also for weekend works, the A40 is closed westbound between the Marylebone Flyover and the Northern Roundabout, so definitely do expect delays. And do expect delays in central London until around 3 o'clock this afternoon. Lots of roads are closed around Piccadilly, St James's Park and Whitehall. It's for the Major General's review. They should reopen around 3 o'clock this afternoon.
This is LBC.
At Specsavers, we've got hearing devices that can stream music or movies, and ones that are good in crowds. Rechargeable battery ones. Ones that are good at home. Ones that are good in the great outdoors. Ones that connect to phones. Ones that fit in your ear. Ones that fit over your ear. And ones that fit in wherever you happen to be. We've even got ones in our advanced range that use AI to make speech sound clearer. And they're all available at great Specsavers prices. Book a free hearing check today, because OK Hearing is not OK.
What's your possible? The vision only you can make happen. Whatever the size of your business, accelerate your growth with the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform. Power your possible with the number one recommended cloud accounting software, Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
With Lidl Plus Fruity Super Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free fresh fruit coupon with every shop. Download the Lidl Plus app to get by switching to the Retail Industry Awards Fresh Produce Retailer of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability. Ends 4th of the 6/25. Full T's and C's apply. See Lidl.co.uk/spin.
At Wickes, save on Dulux Standard 2.5 litre coloured emulsion. Was £23, now £15. Feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Ends Wednesday. Terms apply.
For simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
Darling, hold my hand.
nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. Discovering amazing destinations like Ibiza, Lanzarote and Crete. And relaxing in the sun with award-winning VIP service from the Which? Travel Brand of the Year 2024. So, book now from London Stansted with Jet 2 Holidays. Package holidays you can trust. Patronage protected, subject to availability and conditions.
Matthew Wright on LBC. Text 84850.
Could teachers and bankers be leading us through the next revolution? The Economist magazine reckons the middle class are the new radicals. The working class are happy to coalesce around Nigel Farage and reform. The middle class feels lost. Revolution, bring it on, says Alan in Guildford. I'm 67 and guess I'm middle class. I'm fuming at the ridiculous state of politics and the clearly massively unequal distribution of wealth. I want to assemble a sensible government that initiates conversations with the public and explains reasoning. Most of us agree we want a better society. Our current political parties are a joke. And then James says, Brent, our last caller just before the break, Brent was great, makes for a nice change to hear people stand behind principles rather than parties or people. And Ian in Fife says, Matthew, it's serfdom the problem. People are blind to the mess, which is the UK. They get what they deserve. Do they? Well, Milo's on the line from Seven Sisters. Good morning to you, Milo.
Hi, Matthew. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. And I'm being told you're a banker. You're in banking.
Yes.
Are you a revolutionary banker?
Well, I think that's hard to say compared to the last caller.
Okay.
What I will say is that the sentiment is correct in the sense that I hear a lot of clamour, even among bankers, for things like higher taxes. To make the country actually more investable
in
terms of things like productivity and also in terms of actually getting growth in the economy. Because we've had so much about austerity programs, but they actually haven't made the UK any more of an attractive place to invest. And when you look at things objectively, what bankers typically look at is, are these policies good for the expansion of trade? Are they good for the expansion of the economy overall? And things that basically mean that fewer and fewer people have access to money make it actually a harder sell because you've got fewer customers at the end of the day. And so while on the face of it, people's view of bankers is obviously centered around sort of Gordon Gekko and a default towards sort of lower taxes and greed being good and actually, the fundamentals of what, you know, I think across bankers, law, accountancy, and most of the professions is an adherence to things like the rule of law. It is to do with making, you know, society not necessarily fairer overall, but certainly to say, you know, what is actually going to be good to propel us forward. So, yes, things around the European Union, for instance, you know, better enhanced trading relationships, more access to services for those who need it, making sure that sort of industry grows, and that involves, you know, giving a good standard of living to people in the industrial sector is really important. And when you look at economies and markets that have actually grown faster than ours without intensive austerity programs, and you look at the continent and that countries like Spain, for instance, they've actually grown considerably faster in spite of having, you know, left-wing led governments. And so it's not as though it's a default that, you know, automatically a banker automatically wants somebody like Trump or Kemi Badenoch or Nigel Farage in there. Now, whether that makes them radical or not, I don't know. But it's certainly these days the yardstick for what's considered radical is basically putting a penny on income tax because none of the political parties will want it.
Point taken. Yes.
I've heard some very interesting sentiments recently. Like, as you recall, just before Christmas, there was the case of the murder of the United Healthcare CEO in the States, a Guardian report came out regarding what had been going on.
Oh, the salary, the wage, so it was like 27 million or something, I think she was being...
But it then became clear through a Guardian investigation, I think, last week, that the company that should have been paying people in care homes to circulate do not resuscitate petitions to make it more profitable for them. And I overheard a trader one day saying, you know what, that guy might have had a point, you know. And I was like, what?
tell me about the... So what, I think you made a really, really strong point that it would be a massive error to perceive bankers as a homogenous lump that are innately right-wing, small-c conservatives. So what I'd like to ask you is, why are the mainstream political parties not listening to people like yourself, to a sector that you've just spelled out all the things that I want in this country, you want them, but no political party is pushing for them?
I think the problem is that the political parties have been somewhat hijacked by a group of small donors who happen to have much more libertarian instincts and harder conservative instincts than many of the sector as a whole. Maybe. And when you look at the people that were funding Boris Johnson, for instance, these are groups of people who were, you know, blatantly just profiting off, you know, shorting the pound and all kinds of other things. And I think that the reality is that you do need lots more small money in politics. You do need people to actually get involved.
Sorry to jump in, it's just a really interesting point to make that you are saying, in essence, that our political system has been hijacked by a small number of wealthy people who are distorting the narrative. And I'm kind of minded to agree. Milo, thank you. Two really strong calls, Brent followed by Milo. Sort of different approaches to the same issue. And I'm starting to get this Economist article. I really am. More of your thoughts, hopefully, to maybe squeeze one more in. But as you'll know, I'm always enthusiastic about positive cancer stories. And there's lots of talk about how blood tests may change cancer treatment in the future. And today there's details of a new ultra-sensitive blood test which can detect tiny, teeny, tiny fragments of tumour DNA, which scientists believe could be revolutionary, that word again, in terms of treating NHS patients. I'm delighted to say we've got Professor Pat Price on the line, clinical oncologist and co-founder of the Catch Up With Cancer campaign. Good morning to you, Pat.
Good morning.
I've been sort of hearing about this through my cancer sources for a while. It does seem extremely exciting.
Yes, it's a technology development. So as we know, our DNA goes wrong when we get cancer and gets mutations. And we've got some drugs for some mutations that can switch them off. Great news. But how do we find out which one you've got? Up until now, we had to use the biopsy and extract the DNA, and it took a long time. And so people had to wait to know which drug to get. Now they've found these tiny bits of DNA in the blood and they can measure it off that. So they've looked at about 10,000 lung cancer patients so far over the last 18 months, and it's about 2 weeks quicker. So great. Not everybody has them in the blood, but for those who do, but great. Look, faster, quicker, easier for patients. I know it seems a small step for some patients, but the technology, the fact that we can find these tiny bits of DNA in the blood, that is going to be good.
Do you foresee that targeted treatments for all the different variations of cancer that are out there, and like I said, we don't have all of them.
No.
Are we ever going to get there? I mean, I've got a friend in cancer research who says we shouldn't really talk about curing cancer because it'll never happen, but great strides do seem to be made, you know, all the time now in cancer treatment.
I think that's right. The more we find out about things, the trouble is our DNA has very good schemes about how to evade things. It's okay for one and then it changes itself and it's this constantly catching up. But there are things that are generic to lots of tumours, like this PD-L1 marker, which actually then the immunotherapy helps. So I think we are getting there and cancer is better treated these days. So I think there's hope. But I think we've also got to get on with our normal backlog in the NHS and treating with people with the normal things as well.
We're here to that. Pat Price, thank you, Professor Pat Price. Should tell you that NHS England is going to become the first health service in the world to roll out a blood test first approach to diagnosing lung cancer following this pilot. And they reckon up to 15,000 could benefit. benefit, which I think is a truly wonderful story. A friend of mine's been treated for lung cancer at the moment, and it is not an easy thing to endure by any stretch of the imagination. A couple more thoughts. A lot of love for Brent. Polly says, I completely relate to Brent, agree with everything he said, as I'm an NHS nurse of over 40 years. Who's this? This is Mark. Says, Matthew, I'm 58 and from a mining family, but I'm now middle class. I own my own house, etc. I served 22 years in the military, still working, but feel like I'm getting hammered for tax, etc., from all directions. Feels like the government's take from the grafters to give to the grifters. Bring on the revolution. Well, we seem to have struck a chord. Let's see if we can keep the enthusiasm through the next hour when we look at disposable vapes and plans to ban them from tonight. There's concern that chucking away vapes that you can't recharge or refill, very bad for the environment, but is there a massive loophole in the government plans that you can now buy vapes that will be rechargeable but not refillable? So you can still buy them and you can still chuck them away after a single use if you wish. Is there a better way? Should we be following Australia and making vapes something you can only buy in chemists or pharmacies? How would that help wean people off tobacco? Give us a call with your thoughts.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Defence Secretary says he has no doubt that military spending will reach 3% of GDP by 2034. John Healey has told a newspaper the target is no longer an ambition but a certainty. A major review of the armed forces is due to be published next week. Earlier this year, Sir Keir Starmer laid out plans to increase defence spending to 2.5% by April 2027.
I believe we must now change our approach to national security, so we are ready to meet the challenges of our volatile world. The reason for this is straightforward.